PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week, that is not a fancy backdrop on his computer. It's Adam Rayberg of Bridgestone Golf, and he is on location doing work. Lucky to have him on. Adam, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, Dan, thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to jump on.
You know, the beard's looking fantastic. Let's talk about that real quick. We saw some good content from the PGA show. How's the year getting started for you?
Man, it's been a great start to the year. We had an amazing run at the PGA show. Launching a new tour ball always is an exciting year, and early success out there with the tour ball. But started with the PGA show. We announced that Tuesday. I was lucky enough, you guys kind of stopped by the booth as well, THP Group, and did some really cool content there. So started off PGA show, amazing kind of launch of the ball. And then kind of, you know, before we announced the ball, Chris won Sony. Chris Goddard won the Sony Open like one day before we announced the new ball, which is amazing. And then since then, he's won again. So really good early momentum for the golf ball for sure.
Yeah, I think it's great. You talk a lot about Bridgestone's heritage and origins in ball. And the story over the last couple of decades has been really aggressively focused on fitting and performance. And as it relates to, you know, in hand, in experience, not just stuff you you read on the internet. And I think that was the identity at the show this year. You saw a lot of guys going into the booth, hitting the ball for themselves and seeing the results that they had. I get a sense this is incredibly intentional from your crew, making it very present what's happening with this golf ball. And I'd love to know, because you've been such a fitting forward story, why that strategy this year? Why so in your face on the fitting?
Yeah, so we're the number one ball fitter in golf, and that's been kind of our identity over the years. But there has been some major intentionality this year kind of moving forward to make sure that we talk about that a little bit more going into the season. So, you know, at the booth, you saw we had a fitting bay inside the booth. I mean, obviously the PGA show has the ETC center down kind of far in on the right where demo day kind of takes place. And we have ball fitting there, but we really moved ball fitting into the booth, into the bay and into the booth to kind of put some intentionality behind that, because, you know, it's super important to play the right ball for your game. And that's one thing that we've always said, but it's so true. If you think about how you fit throughout the bag, whether it's driver all the way down to wedges and putters, you know, golfers, whether they play on Sunday on TV or whether you're playing at your local course in the dogfight, you know, you have to make sure you're in the right golf ball for your game. You don't necessarily have to play the balls that the guys on tour play. You know, tour validation is kind of there for the golf ball on the highest level. But, you know, getting fit in the right golf ball is kind of what we're all about here at Bridgestone Golf.
You know, we have talked a lot over the years about the right numbers, living in the right windows. And I would say 20 years ago, the discussion wasn't really about the player understanding the numbers the way they do today. You had to convince them that their window had to be here to have optimum performance. And I feel like now, especially over the last couple of years with Sim Golf really taking over, there's a shift in the mentality of a lot of players to no longer be, you tell me what the right number is and let's see if the results validate that. I feel like a lot of those players are now coming into a fitting with the expectation of, this is my window, this is my optimal performance window, and I need your product to get there. I would love to hear, Adam, your perspective on how that mentality shifted quite a bit and whether you're seeing more of that in the field.
Yeah, there's definitely a higher IQ knowledge. Every year that goes by, you know, people get into places, whether it's 5-iron golf or go to their local pro, and they're becoming more and more understanding of their launch conditions. So we're getting a higher educated golfer that comes to our fittings. Now, there's a lot of people that still have never been on a launch monitor. We see that a lot as well. But more and more people kind of know what they're expecting from their golf ball. And they're coming to us with that data, with that knowledge, with that feedback of like, hey, you know, I flight the ball down a little too much. Like, do you have something that can kind of raise up my peak trajectory or vice versa? Like, you know, I'm kind of losing it to the right. Do you have a ball that like takes a little bit spin off the tee, but I don't really want to give up a lot of spin around the green. I still want a ball that checks. So when we make these golf balls, when we make Tour B, when we make E12, really designing them to hit those buckets inside of the space and fit these demographic of golfers to where a golf ball kind of matches up with the style of play they want from their golf ball. But yes, to your point, like we're seeing a very, every year that goes by, more and more people know their swing speed, you know, they know ball speed and launch angles. And a lot of people are coming to us and even understanding what their backspin numbers are and wanting to adjust those up and down based on the golf ball.
Yeah, just chasing slightly different things, right? Like it's yes. Really curious. I was in a launch monitor yesterday, and some of the things I was looking for, let's say 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, I've accepted those numbers now, and now I'm chasing slightly different things to really refine,
you know,
what matters a ton. But
yeah,
you can shift that with ball, you can shift that with club. Let's be honest, no one's shifting it with a golf lesson. That's the easiest thing to do. Don't be ridiculous there. But you know, it is funny how we get into these small pockets and we get super isolated on the little things that can really step forward our golf ball or our golf experience on the course.
Yeah. I mean, the golf, we say it over and over. Tiger has said it in a ton of interviews. The golf ball is the only piece of equipment that you're going to hit on every single shot. Whether you try to drive it 300 yards or tap it in from 2 inches, that ball has to do everything in between. So it's the most important piece of equipment in our opinion. And, you know, matching that up with your style of play and having that ball give you what you need, you know, is ideal. And that's why fitting matters so much.
I tell you what, man, I've got a little golf shirt envy. That's a pretty spicy getup you got going on today. I like it a lot.
Thank you.
Very good.
Little Swannies unit, I believe.
Yeah. Can you share what you're doing out there today? What you're up to?
Oh yeah, we're here at the Omni Champions Gate, and we're doing kind of a demo day for Dick's Sporting Goods Golf Galaxy. It's kind of their like summit for the year where they're getting all their associates together and we're educating them about the golf ball and kind of fitting all the associates that we possibly can in the day and kind of making sure they understand what the golf ball is and the new differences, you know, telling them about the VeloSearch technology, the fitting story. So that's kind of what we're doing today in nice Orlando. We drove down yesterday from Atlanta. It was a little cold in Atlanta, so it's nice and warm and toasty down here. It's a nice difference. Atlanta's been kind of cool the last month or so, actually. So nice to get in some 70s weather down here.
Oh yeah, I've got location envy. Count on that. It looks awesome. I think I was at Champions Gate maybe 10 years ago now, 12 years ago now.
Yeah.
They still have that little short game, like par 3.
Oh, that's right behind me.
Yeah.
Like there's that little setup where you could play a few holes. I would love to get around here. This is what I would love to do. Just hit some little short chippy wedges, take my excess with some spin and hit those little halfy shots out here. That'd be super fun.
So it's interesting. We talk a lot about the player getting fit. We spend a ton of time focusing on players learning more about what works for them. The challenge you guys have as a golf ball company is you also have to make sure the people who are talking about your product on the shelves are getting it right. Dick's Sporting Goods is a really great example. It's all over their shelves. So I assume these parts of the year, like this concept, is incredibly important to you because you do have a good story to tell, and it, making sure they understand what's really happening has to matter a lot because they're the next layer, right?
Yeah, they're the touch point to the consumer, you know, whether it's green grass, you know, our guys out in the field, our sales guys, you know, going door to door in the pre-book time in the fall and now in the early spring, touching and talking to those guys or, you know, the marketing team from Bridgestone. You know, we just did a PGA Superstore one. Now we're at the Dick's Sporting Goods of Golf Galaxy. So we're kind of making our rounds after the PGA show, making sure everybody really understands this new product, the gravity of it, and how to fit it, and how to correctly talk to that consumer who walks down the aisle, and you've got that like 30 seconds to kind of tell them what they're looking at. And, you know, the RX and RXS are for swing speeds under 105. The X and XS is for over 105. Oh, you hit it, you know, you're over 105. Well, do you like a little bit more spinner on the greens, or are you a little bit more distance balance golf ball? Oh, you like more spin? Boom, XS. So it's that short little amount of time you have with the consumer that you can kind of tell them about the ball. And then it's our time here with the associates, and hopefully we can drill in their head, you know, and kind of train them how to fit these golf balls correctly.
It's been an interesting couple of months, especially for THPers, because we've had some exposure to the mm-hmm. ball prior to release. There's been a fair bit of testing going on. I enjoyed the way you went about it. It was confusing at first, but then I was like, okay, this makes a lot of sense. VS Proto. Mm-hmm. Like, why would they call it VS Proto? It's a Tour B. But in reality, VS does have a role that is playing. You're sort of spotlighting or highlighting one of the most important evolutions that this ball has. I want to go back a step before we really dive into that to say that, from my understanding, this particular product has been years in the making. There's been a lot of testing that's incorporated some of your tour guys into it. Can you give us a timeline on how VS came about, or how the new Tour B came about?
Yeah, I love that question. I love talking about this because this is the part of my job that's super fun, because what I did when we got kind of toward the final stage of prototyping, after we had done testing with amateurs, after we'd done testing with our tour guys, and kind of got that last one right before we go to Tour B, I went to Japan and kind of asked all those questions, like, hey, the Velo Search technology, what we're going to talk about in January is this new core mantle integration and this new mantle layer technology. The question I had for them is like, how long were you guys working on this from the prototyping stage? And the information I got back from them was amazing. You know, they've been working on this for over 6 years, and they had over 240 different integration models or iteration models of prototypes. So that means they, you know, obviously when you make a prototype, always try to explain it like this. If you were trying to maximize a race car, right, you wouldn't change the shocks, the tires, the aerodynamics, and the spoiler all at one time. You'd make one car that has wheel differences, one car that has shock differences, one car that has spoiler differences, and then you would test those things individually, and then you'd start molding them together to where you get this like supercar. And that's how we do prototyping at Bridgestone. You know, we'll have six different prototypes of RX, and they'll all have one small change into them. And then when we find out, oh, this one didn't do as well, because I mean, the differences on paper versus in the real world could be different. You know, simulation data should say like, oh, this ball is going to be great, but then when players hit it, it might be a different story. So then we kind of mold those balls together and we say, okay, you know, Proto 5 and Proto 3 was great. Let's mold that mantle layer with this new, you know, density cover, blah, blah, blah. So when Japan came back to me and told me all the iterations and all the stuff that they had done to this golf ball, I didn't realize it. You know, I thought maybe this had been a 2-year process, which is our normal Tour B, you know, but they had said they'd been working on this material discovery in the mantle for over 6 years. So it was a long time coming. They had said they had some early prototypes, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, but didn't really get it to the finish line of where we wanted it to be to bring to market. So more testing, more R&D. And so when we went to the final stage of prototyping, we made the VS golf balls. And the VS was the VS Proto Project is what we called it. And that's how we got all those golf balls out to you guys, the THPers. We did a ton of testing in the summer. We kind of hit up a lot of golf courses and worked with them and had, you know, 20 to 40 members of courses playing the ball as early as late summer last year. And then, of course, we got them out on tour sooner than we ever had. We had, you know, Goddard Up and Jason Day and Kurt Kitayama and all these guys kind of converted early in the kind of the FedEx time of the year and towards the later time when the guys were playing Grant Thornton and Sanderson and RSM and stuff like that. And then, you know, the VS prototype project was really, it was kind of a naming mechanism. VS ultimately ended up Velo Surge. And then the golf balls were named after the color boxes that they were ultimately going to be, which is you know, VS Red ended up being the RX. So those were really early prototypes of what the final version of the Tour B was going to be. So what it did is it built a little intrigue, a little mystery behind kind of what was going to come. And we were happy to announce that it was going to be the new Tour B golf balls.
So it's a meaningful change. And a lot of times in golf, when there is a significant change in a product or something that has a significant impact on a product, you'll see a name change altogether. Mm-hmm. How was there at any point that you guys internally said, maybe we move on from Tour B and go to a slightly different name? Or was it always going to be Tour B, and then the VS was just sort of supporting the idea that new tech was here and you wanted to share it a little bit differently?
Well, I mean, there's always internal conversations behind, you know, what we're going to name the product, you know, over the, you know, kind of summertime and early spring. But I mean, the Tour B has equity as far as a global golf ball. I mean, it's number one in Japan right now. We're the number one market share of golf ball in Japan. So it's very popular in Japan. We're obviously a Japanese based company. So the name means something, you know, it has some equity. And yeah, there's always conversation of, hey, do we want to change it up? Do we want to swap it up? But you know, the naming mechanism, you know, a lot of consumers, you know, speak highly of the RX and the X. So there's some equity in the name as well there. But yes, there was definitely conversations in boardrooms of whether we're going to keep it the same or kind of do a swap up. That's why we felt like the prototype testing in the fall was a fun way to kind of see how people might react to a name change. So you never know.
Yeah, it's funny, man. Like golfers, when they find something they like, you tend to get a little cranky when it changes. I remember, you know, B330 was a hard one for me to walk away from. I remember when you guys moved from the Bridgestone to the big script B logo B. Eventually you get comfortable with it when you have like full emotional investment into something. It's a little bit harder to walk away from it at the time. So when I saw VS Proto, one of the things I really liked was you still maintain those colors. So I had a really good idea what was, you know, each iteration. There's almost a level of embracement to, well, I'm either black or red. Really depends on the kind of swing I have this year, whether I want to support a little bit lower spin or whether I want to really maximize that ball speed. So, you know, it was nice to have things to latch on to. But it's also really nice to hear that Tour B is carrying on and there's enough of that internal structure that is in place where you can get the product you want, the product you're familiar with, but with this new technology.
Absolutely.
So I feel like we have to talk about VeloSurge since we've sort of been dancing around it this whole time. What is fundamentally different about this version of golf ball, and does it all start with VeloSurge?
Yeah, definitely. Kind of starts with VeloSurge. VeloSurge is our core mantle integration technology that's inside the new golf ball. It's really where all the ball speed gains jumped. What we did is we did two things as far as the VeloSurge technology. It is a new core mantle integration. It is a new mantle material discovery that we put on the inside of the golf ball. And what it did is it added a new dense mantle layer to the golf ball. So it did two things. By adding a more dense and heavier mantle layer, we move weight to the outside of the golf ball closer to the edge. And what that did is by moving that weight closer to the perimeter, that's where you actually impact the golf ball. And so we saw efficiencies of smash factor increase, which ultimately means increase in ball speed. So better efficiency of energy transfer. Secondly, by moving that weight to the outside, we created a higher MOI golf ball. And by increasing the MOI of the golf ball, we saw increases of axis stability. We actually did a lot of robot testing too. Some of our players, you know, kind of in that proto testing were asking about that and saying like, what's it gonna do with my flight? So we actually even did a lot of iron testing on robot to where the ball's drawing and fading. And we saw decreases in axis tilt. And so what that means is when the ball went in the air, you still had your curvature that a player is used to. It's just you had less curve on it. So you could be more aggressive on your shots. You know, you could try to, basically Goddard said, I can try to cut the ball a little more and it holds straighter. I love that because, you know, Chris, what he hates is when he goes to cut one and he loses it right, He says that's kind of his hate of losing, which is the opposite. Tiger always said he never wanted to see the ball go left. And so he hated when he kind of toe hooked one and it would fall off to the left side. So with that higher MOI, we did see increases in axis stability. So those two things, an increase in ball speed due to smash factor efficiencies, and then a more forgiving golf ball with greater axis stability.
That's crazy. And one of the things I want to talk about before we go too far into the weeds on that, material change. I feel like there's a discussion about material going on right now where people are really looking into alternative options. And it sounds like for 6 years, you guys have been really pressing hard to find that sort of separator in the ball world. So I assume this is a great component to that. It's a great stepping stone for Bridgestone, but I also assume that you're not done. You're going to keep exploring those types of things, really trying to maximize the potential that we as golfers have.
Well, I mean, we're a polymer and rubber company at our heart. That is what we kind of focus on. That's why the golf ball's always been our main focus, because Bridgestone is built down from the heritage of Bridgestone. And we are polymer and rubber engineers. And, you know, we have all these polymer and rubber scientists that are always working to find new materials. And we truly feel like, yes, there's limits that the USGA sets on what a golf ball could do from a distance orientation. But there's things that we can do inside the golf ball. And we truly believe there's ways to make the ball better, that'll better perform for different demographics to give you optimal performance and increase that performance to kind of get you where you need to be. So we're always trying to tweak. We're always looking at new materials. You know, sometimes, you know, you hear companies say, oh, we tweaked the spec and the, you know, the cover's firmer now and the mantle layer is firmer, so now you have more spin. And those are just spec tweaks. And we're always looking for ways not only to change spec to better match up, you know, our ball fitting data, but we're looking for new materials to make the ball better, you know, more resilient, faster, you know, spin more, you know, separate that spin slope from tee to green to where you get more spin around the greens and less spin off the tee. Those are the things we're always looking to improve on.
Yeah, spin, a lot of spin talk. Get around the green, I assume that is a big component on what the cover looks like and how much it interacts with the club face, especially a wedge face. Mm-hmm. So you have reactive IQ this year. There is some pretty interesting tech going in there. What can golfers look for with that?
Yeah, it's definitely a huge part of the golf ball build. You know, when we do ball fitting, we start with driver and work our way back to the green. But greenside performance is a huge part, and it is very important. So just because we start with driver off the ball fitting doesn't mean that we neglect what needs to go around the green. That's why the reactive IQ cover was kind of invented on these golf balls. The new ball does feature our award-winning reactive IQ cover. And the reactive IQ cover is a material discovery that we put on the ball, you know, a couple generations ago. It has impact modifiers. And what that means is when you impact the golf ball, it reacts to the force applied. I know we've probably seen those videos of those college kids that make that like liquid goo that they can run across, or if you punch it, it's firm. But if you sit down on it, you'll sink down on it. That's an example of a material that reacts to the force applied. So when you hit that material hard, it firms up and it reacts to a firm. But if you kind of put your hand on it, you actually can like sink down in it. So our cover features materials that react similar to that. And when you hit it with driver, it firms up and it reacts firm and it helps get ball speed off the, even though the cover is very thin, it does help get ball speed off the tee. And then when you're chipping around the green, obviously that's that vertical force, that tangential force that you apply to the golf ball, not normal force. And you want that ball to be soft and have a lot of spin. So it reacts differently on a slower, softer impact to add more spin and control around the green. So that's super important. When we started talking to our tour guys, that's one of the first things they ask. Like, we tell them about the material at the end of the testing. You know, we try not to tell them what's going on until we towards the end. And one of the first things the guy said was like, hey, you know, the ball's going to spin around the greens, right? And like, yeah, let's go over and let's do some continued testing. And, you know, we want to make sure the ball's doing everything the guys need around the green as well. And also the everyday consumer, that the ball's fitting what they need as far as a greenside performance feel.
It's funny. I was doing a little bit of research before getting on this call, and I was reading Reactive IQ. I was like, man, that feels really familiar. So it's nice that that technology carries a little bit. Mm-hmm. I have a question when it comes to the tour adaptation to that, and that's what sells them more. I know guys like Tiger was really famous for saying, I'll take as much spin as I can and I'll do whatever I can to manipulate the ball. I assume that a lot of that has to do with around the green. But when you get a guy, and especially a guy on tour who's going to pick a specific ball to put in play, what really sells them on landing there, and maybe even better on this particular run, what really gets them, drives it home that this is the ball they want to play?
Well, you know, it's so funny because it's very different for different players. Like, for instance, Chris, when we were testing a lot with Chris in the fall and the summer, and, you know, things he needs are different than Jason Day. You know, Jason is, you know, obviously he's getting in his late 30s and 40s, and he's chasing a little bit of ball speed. And so he wants his numbers to kind of be 180 to 177 ball speed. So he's kind of focusing on that. He has the consistency. Chris, on the other hand, talks about flight consistency and where his peak trajectory lies with like six iron. And he's very finicky on kind of what his mid irons and short irons are doing in flight. The dude has ball speed for days. So like, you know, hitting driver, he kind of says like, hitting driver is no big deal for me. I can, you know, I'm actually could hit it further, you know, because he hits a little squeezy cut down the left and he tries to make sure he holds the left side of the fairway. And then he says, I love your golf ball because if I lose one, it's like right side of the fairway, maybe rough right side. He's like, but I never really lose one. So like, I'm good with squeezing driver, but like, I want it to do this, you know, like he doesn't want it to feel floaty in the air with a six iron. Because he hits down on the ball like pretty aggressively. I mean, we've all seen the swings now. They're talking about how, like, you know, he's a little bit steeper than the more modern golfer and kind of moves into the ball. So he puts a lot of spin on it. So the one thing he doesn't want to see is that ball like float and start, you know, because he cuts the ball. He doesn't want to see it kind of float off the green and be that short right one that doesn't get to the green. So every player is different. You know, when I've worked with Tiger so much over the years, you know, you talked about it. Give me spin, give me spin, give me spin. You know, Tiger grew up in his junior days and early in his career, literally on a blotta ball. So he said he learned golf taking spin off because every blotta ball back then just spun through the moon. You know, you didn't have to put spin on the ball. It was there. So mm-hmm. he worked on dead handing shots. And so then when he moved later into, you know, playing the ball we made for Nike and then into ours, he always wanted the spinny golf ball because that was his style of play. And then now he's evolved to playing the X, which is the less spinny golf ball. So, you know, he's kind of learned how to put spin on the ball. He puts a ton of spin on the ball. You know, he says he doesn't, but he really does. He puts a ton of spin around the greens. Where he loses his spin is kind of the mid irons, long irons. He's really shallow to the ball with like his five iron. You know, it feels like he brushes the ground for a foot behind the ball till he hits it with his five iron. It's really amazing to see. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is every guy has their different box to check, you know, whether it's Tiger, you know, give me all the spin and I can take it off, or whether it's Chris, make sure the ball's not floaty on my approach irons, or whether it's Jason, who kind of wants a little more pop off the tee and is looking for like a ball speed number. You know, everybody is so different in what they need. And it's just the importance of ball fitting. You can kind of, I can ladder it down to the everyday guy. I mean, you know, I may have different needs in my ball than you. We might have the same swing. I mean, we may swing, you know, the same mile per hour and put very similar, you know, conditions on it, but I may have a different style of play from my short irons in than you do. And so that's why ball fitting is so important. And, you know, knowing what you need from your ball and it checking those boxes is so pivotal.
Yeah. It's funny. I actually wanted to jump into a different component, but you brought up a lot of good points that there's no perfect solution to a ball fit. It's what you want to play. It's how you want to play. I've been chasing the low spin stuff for years, and I'm finally getting a little shallow with my irons. I'm like, oh, maybe I could, you know, get a little creative now. Maybe,
yeah.
The black or the blue could be a really good color box for me. It's fun to dance around it and have the potential, and not just playing conditions as well. You know, windy days, maybe I slide back to the red. Quiet days, maybe I go full on, you know, Tour BX and really have fun sending the ball. But one of the things I really wanted to discuss, and this stems from a text I sent you last year, but it actually came back up again yesterday. I was in the hitting bay at a local sim spot, a golf tech actually, and they had some balls not named Bridgestone there. And I had a brand new wedge, and every time I hit this poor ball on the in the simulator, half the ball would be left on the wedge.
Yeah.
And you know, by the time I was done, my nice black oxide wedge is now basically white on the face. But then it stems back from a text I'd sent you last year where I put an older Bridgestone through the absolute ringer. It had four sim sessions and I think like 45 holes on it. And the discussion comes around durability. We talked a little bit of how brutal some of these simulator setups are, specifically what you hit into on golf balls. So a really roundabout way to say, you know, balls have a longer lifespan now, especially when you're incorporating sim golf into it. And the conversation about durability is really coming into play. So in terms of technology, core design, that's great. But when you have a cover, you also want to focus on durability, right? So where does Bridgestone stand on that?
Well, from a manufacturing standpoint, I mean, we do things a little differently than a lot of we do not paint our golf ball. You know, what you see on the outside is a white urethane mixture, and you're actually impacting urethane on the ball. What others do in the cast urethane application, where they put like the top of the ball and the bottom of the ball and they kind of fuse it together, they're actually painting the golf ball in that last layer. And that is the weakest part of the golf ball. That is what you're seeing when you hit that crispy wedge, and you look down and you see those little white lines in your grooves. That's actually the paint coming off. And what you're doing is you're actually shearing and deteriorating the outside of the golf ball. So what that's going to do is a couple of things. One thing is, you know, you're going to be probably pissed off because you just paid $50-something for a dozen balls and you've ripped it on the first hole. But then two, there's also performance deteriorations that happen when you cut or when you put a line or a shear, or you peel it up a little. What's going to happen is aerodynamically, when that ball's flying through the air, you know, you're spinning at, you know, if you hit a 9-iron at, you know, 9,000 RPMs, that ball's catching a lot of lift and drag coefficients that really wasn't designed for that dimple pattern. So a lot of times you might hit that ball shorter because it's going to have that flap hanging off and it's going to actually deteriorate the performance. So at Bridgestone, we use injection molding, and what that does is it melts the cover around the golf ball, and the cover that goes on the golf ball is actually a white urethane production. And so we have no paint on the outside of the golf ball, and I know paint has been kind of talked about over the last few weeks. There's a brand that, you know, talked about how they've improved their painting process and how, oh, there's less pooling and there's less, you know, guttering inside the golf ball. When you paint, you're still going to have that. Whether it's a lot or a little, it's going to be there. So anytime you add another layer of paint, you know, gravity is going to pull, you know, going to pull that liquid down into that bottom. So that's one thing that we don't have to deal with. When you pull that ball out of our mold, it is done. There's not an extra layer to put on there. We put the clear coat on it for, you know, for looks purposes, to shine it up, and then it goes right in the packaging. So no paint on our golf ball. We're proud of that. It's something that we've always done from an injection molding capability. And it's really just kind of a manufacturing flex that we've had over the years. And now it's coming to light. So we definitely like to talk about it. And we encourage all the other OEMs to talk about paint as much as they want, because we don't do it.
I love it. It's I've never really paid that much attention. A lot of people talk about how many wedge shots you can hit before the cover starts, you know, falling off your golf ball.
Yeah.
But the simulator component has really opened my eyes to that. Yeah. Not just because you have this ball that, that gets effectively beat up, but also when you're hitting into the simulator, you're constantly striking the same spot.
It
does something to a lot of covers where as soon as you put it on course after that, you're going to see exactly what adheres to that material very, very quickly.
Well, think of your sim when you hit it, right? I mean, if you're swinging 100, you know, and you have a perfect smash factor, the ball's coming off at 150 miles an hour. So that ball's impacting that screen, and sometimes the screens can be rough, you know, for textured. And, you know, that ball's hitting that screen or that net at 150 miles an hour. So a lot of times when you see that scrape that comes off the ball in a simulator, it's because of that impact. You know, you impact it at 100 miles an hour, but then that ball's actually leaving at 150. And so that ball velocity is so much higher than your impact, and it can easily scrape. And plus it's rotating, you know, it's spinning too. So then it impacts that screen and brushes up against it. And we've seen them, you know, where guys have really, really high ball speeds and impacting a simulator net or a, you know, a screen at, you know, close to 190, and, you know, one impact and like scrubs off the paint on some of these painted golf balls versus a urethane ball that's far more durable into those conditions.
Yeah. Tell me about Goddard. It's been a really interesting start to the year for him. I suppose it couldn't come at a better time for folks like you over at Bridgestone celebrating the product a little bit. Has he spent much time talking about the model he's gone to and the shift? And what you'd mentioned, controlling the right side, like he loves to play up the left, but to control and hates the full float right side. Is he attributing a lot of his success to that absolute confidence of being able to stand up and not fearing either the right or the left side?
Yeah, we talked a lot with him. We kind of, you know, winning twice this quickly in the season is phenomenal, but we kind of felt a big dam was about to open up for him to win. And so in the fall, he played great last year. Obviously, he won the Scottish Open and, you know, kind of went head-to-head with Rory and beat him on his own turf. And then he, you know, went the next week and played the Open and played phenomenal with the Major. So we kind of felt like this year was going to be a great year, and he's exceeded our expectations even beyond that by winning two of the first four that he's played in, which is amazing. But, you know, in the fall, when we kind of started talking to him about this new ball, we want to be super transparent because these guys play and they see the most minuscule differences in golf balls. So we told him about the consistency and the, you know, the axis stability. And that was one thing he definitely was super interested in because he does like to work the ball. He works the ball probably more than any player on our staff. And he likes to work it left or right. And sometimes he'll hit like a 20-yard peeler with a 6-iron, you know, to a back right pin. So he needs to depend on the golf ball to do what it needs to do. So we had a lot of conversations with him, you know, and when we were testing in Oklahoma, and we talked about the protos. And then once we kind of went that stage, when those protos fell on the USGA list, you know, our tour guy, you know, stuffs his lockers with the new ball, and then he has his normal ball there, and we put the new ball there and really sent him almost take the ball in advance and take this on the shorts and do all that. And he felt confident about it. And it was one of those things where it's like, as a tour guy, that first week of playing a new ball is super important, because if they go out there and it doesn't do the things they want, that's a big hump to get over, because they're going to revert back to the previous ball. Oh, I was playing really good with the previous ball, you know, I'm going to stick with that one. So after that week, we're all, you know, the week he puts it in play, we're all watching the leaderboard and be like, all right, Chris, have a great week, you know. And he played really good. And, you know, we check back in with him, you know, at the end of the week, you know, Monday or Tuesday, and try to get his feedback. And, you know, he was super positive. He loved what the ball was doing in flight and in the air. And the differences was those little couple things that he said. He's like, I do feel like it holds the line a little bit better. You know, your ball before held the line great, but I feel like this one is just a little bit tighter. You know, I can kind of feel, you know, that I can hold the left side even a little bit better with my cut. And that's what he likes. So for him, it was kind of that checkbox, like I said before, of holding that flight in the air and not losing any to the right. And, you know, it's paid some great dividends, and we couldn't have been happier him you know, winning the week before we announced the ball and, you know, giving us that great momentum. We appreciate his play, and he's been really a great player for us. And, you know, it's been really fun testing with him and kind of getting into this new golf ball and seeing this just success that he's had with it already.
Has there been any other surprising early feedback from either, you know, tour players or amateurs that has really resonated with the team so far?
Yeah, I mean, two things that we've kind of gotten back from the ball. I mean, like I said, you build a spec and you build materials on a spreadsheet and R&D, and you look at them and, you know, I've done it long enough and our R&D team's done it long enough. You look at them and go, that ball should do this better than our previous ball. But until you put it in play, until you peg it up, you know, you really don't know if it's going to do that for the amateurs mostly. And then tour players are going to find the changes pretty quick. Two things that we noticed really quickly when we did testing, you know, with the VS balls and with a couple of golf courses is we had players coming back to us and they thought the dimple pattern had changed because of the straightness that the ball was flying. They thought there was an aerodynamic change to the golf ball of like, oh, you guys have made the dimple pattern tighter to where it, you know, flies a little bit straighter, you know, there's less deviation. And that we had to explain was the higher MOI axis stability factor with amateurs. And then secondly, just the ball speed. I mean, Jason and Chris, they definitely notice it. You know, for them, they're on TrackMan, they're on the launch monitors a lot. So they kept saying like, hey, I can kind of see this little 1.5, you know, 2 mile per hour bump in this golf ball, you know, and that's one thing that we kept hearing back from the tour guys. And then even the amateurs, a lot of them, you know, because the ball was flying straighter, they kind of attributed the more distance of like, hey, you're taking away a little bit of my draw and fade off the driver. So I'm hitting it a little further at my home course. You know, we tested a lot of players that were consistent players in one golf course and had them kind of play their previous ball versus this new one. And, you know, that way they can kind of see consistently. Cause when we play the same golf course, we all know like, oh, I can carry the lip of this bunker by 5 yards, or I never get over this bunker. And so the feedback we heard from them is like, yeah, I can definitely see my landing areas. You know, I'm getting 5 to 7 yards, you know, consistently from this golf ball. So the distance was the biggest thing, and the axis stability, those two were amazing to hear. And we're going to kind of come out with a lot more feedback from amateurs. We got tons of emails from these testers. You know, the forum testing on THP, I love diving into that. I try to every couple of days to jump on and kind of, you know, comment to some of these and the feedback. And I love when I hear comments that match up with the changes that we made to the ball. It validates it for me, you know, like, you know, they're not just saying like, oh, I spin the ball more around the green. I'm like, well, okay. But then when I hear something like, you know, I just feel like it flies a little straighter in the air, I'm like, yes, you got it. So that's always the fun things to hear back from the everyday guys.
Awesome. Well, heck of a start for you guys with new Tour B. Obviously got her up big momentum on tour. And you know, based on the feedback I've read on THP, it sounds like everyone should at least go and check out the newer Tour B lineup to see what works well for them. Adam, I want to let you go do your thing. I really appreciate you taking the time today to chat with us about the ball and how things are going for you, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. As always a pleasure to jump on and talk, and appreciate you guys having me on.
Yes, sir. Well, you enjoy the warm day. I'll stay hiding inside here in Ohio in this delightful February month, but that's all right. If you guys are playing golf this weekend, have fun. Go take a chance on the new Tour B. Sounds like straight is the key here, and you know, I think we can all really benefit from that. We'll see you guys next week.
Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey, THP fam. Don Brown, True Temper, back here answering another question at Shaft University. And this is a question we get a lot. It's about our numerical shaft flex system when we talk about Project X versus traditionals R, S, and X, and how do those numbers transfer over. The specific question was about if I'm an S flex player and some other True Temper products, what number do I play in Project X? And the answer for that is 6-0. Now, if you're playing the original Project X blue steel shafts, you can probably go down to a 5-5, just depending on what your preference is for maybe a little too stiff or a little bit softer. But for most cases, that 6-0 is going to be a stiff flex, especially on the graphite and our newer Project X red steel shafts. Hope that helps you out. We'll talk to you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.